All right, what a great Sunday it's been already so far here as we celebrate Easter. He is risen. This is the day we break the fast. Those of you who have been giving up wine over Lent, you know, crack open the Chardonnay. Those of you who have been giving up chocolate, you know, grab the Mr. Big Bar. You've given up sugar, make the biggest bowl of ice cream you can make. Well, you know, those of you giving up meat, you know, fire up the grill, whatever it is. This is our day. This is the reason we gather the other 51 Sundays of the year to celebrate that Jesus is alive. So I want to read the resurrection account for you, Matthew chapter 28. This morning in my devotions, I read Luke's version of it, Matthew chapter 28. Maybe in the interest of time, I'll just read the first two verses of Matthew chapter 28. After the Sabbath, at dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. You know what? I'm going to keep reading. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Don't be afraid, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here, he is risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the woman hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and they worshipped him. Okay, a couple things I see in this passage. You know, you think about the women. They're walking to the tomb that day. No doubt their hearts are heavy. Their minds are discouraged as they're thinking, Jesus, this one that we followed, this leader, this teacher, this healer, he's dead. All their hopes that they had in him as the Redeemer and the Rescuer, you know, they're fading away. What happened to this new movement that they were so hoping would be brought in through Jesus? And they're lugging their spices as they're going to do this primitive embalming on the body of Jesus. Who do they encounter there? Well, an angel. Or in Luke's version I read this morning, two angels. And the angel announces to them, he's not here. He's risen, just as he had predicted. And they're like, what? It's the crack of dawn as they're there. And no doubt they're still sleepy. They're rubbing their eyes thinking, what? Are we actually seeing an angel? Are we hearing right that Jesus has risen from the dead? Now, in this day and age that we live in, a lot of people look at religious experiences and they kind of put them in the same category as personal preferences. And if I've heard it once, I've heard it 100 times, people have said to me, I'm glad that works for you, Jesus. I'm glad that works for you, Rick. I could be talking about Jesus. I could be talking about the Bible. I could be talking about prayer, anything like that. And they say things like, well, I'm glad that works for you. This idea that in our day and age that you know, some things work for some people and other things work for other people. And it's a matter of personal preferences. But when we come to this resurrection of Jesus, is that a matter of personal preference or is that an objective truth? It's kind of like I've got these jars of marbles. I had lost my marbles, so I put it out on social media that I was looking for some, and thankfully some of you responded. In fact, many of you did, and I can only use two up here. But, you know, how many marbles do you think are in this jar? Go ahead, shout it out. 75. The answer is 212. Okay, yeah, okay. What about this big one? I won't lift it up, because it weighs 16.5 pounds, they wrote on here. But how many marbles are in there?
1,600!
The correct answer, the Zabel family wrote, is 1,197 marbles. So, you know, is that a fact that there are 1,197? Or is that a matter of personal preference? Now, I've also got some Starburst candies up here. Who likes Starburst? You know, there's various flavors of Starburst in here. There's cherry, there's orange, there's strawberry and lemon. What's your favorite flavor? Who put their hand up? Who likes strawberry? What do you like, eh? Are you like, well, okay, yeah. What about you? What's your favorite flavor? Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, favorite flavor there? You know, okay, I'm sorry, I only brought three, you know. You evidently have strong opinions about flavors of Starbucks. Now, what is the right flavor of Starburst? Is there a right flavor? Or is that just a matter of personal preference? Like I said, when it comes to religious claims, people say that's a matter of personal preference. And some of them are, right? Gord, who was in the tank there, he loves to journal. He's always giving us gears at staff meeting about we should be journaling on our prayers, you know? I would say that's his personal preference. Myself, I like walking and praying. You know, that's what I like doing twice a day. Some of you are like, no, I don't like doing either of those things. I like looking at ancient prayers and reciting those. You know, we may have personal preference around certain practices, but when it comes to the empty tomb, that's not a matter of cherry or orange Starburst. That's a matter of, like the marbles, it's either there's an objective fact. There are so many marbles. Either the tomb was empty or the tomb isn't empty, right? Because think about the alternatives. If the tomb isn't empty, then what does it mean? Well, it means that perhaps the disciples stole the body. That's what they did. But why? And how did they get through that? Those 16 Roman guards and the seal that's on that tomb, and the guards would lose their lives if they let anybody through there, and so they're armed, that making sure nobody would steal. How plausible is that? Or, you know, another alternative theory is that Jesus actually didn't die on the cross, but that he merely fainted. You know, he swooned. And then when they put him in the empty tomb, it was kind of cold, and that helped him to recover and resuscitate. But again, think about what's the logic of that? You've got a man who was just given 40 lashes minus one. Why didn't they give 40 lashes? Because they knew that most people would die when they're given 40 lashes. So they would just give 39. So he's at the point of almost death. Then he's hanging up there on that cross for hours trying to breathe. And you're saying he just fainted? You know, or a third theory might be that the disciples made this up. They just kind of fabricated the story. But why would they do that? And why then would they give their life? You know, 10 out of the 11 disciples, you know, died as martyrs. Why would they give their life for something if they know it to be a lie, right? I mean, kamikaze pilots will crash into the Twin Towers because they believe that to be true, what they believe in. But if you know something is a lie, you're not going to make it up, right? And then give your life for it. Either Jesus rose from the dead, objective fact, or he didn't. And if he did, it makes all the difference in the world. It's not a matter of it being true for you and not being true for me, etc. It's not like choosing a preference of candy. I've entitled my message, The Easter Effect, based on an article in the Wall Street Journal, which the journalist used that term, the Easter Effect, as he looked back at the ancient Roman world. And he said, how was this society so altered by this group of people? This group of people who, you know, impacted the culture so much so that between a quarter and a half of the citizens of the Roman Empire joined in this Christian movement. That all their religious practices, such as worshiping on the Sabbath, suddenly from Saturday goes to Sunday. And all these other changes that happened, how they viewed responsibility, how they viewed human history, everything changed because of the Easter effect. And friends, I say in 2019, that's just as true. It ought to alter our history because Jesus reigns today. Particularly when, like these women, things look bleak. It looked bleak for them that day when they walked to the tomb. And things in your life, even today, may look bleak because of circumstances or relationship or financial struggles or something else you've got in your life. But there's good news from the graveyard today. The tomb is empty, and that can change your life. That can be good news for you when you're feeling that life is bleak. It can be good news for you when your outlook is like these women, not looking good. Good news for you when perhaps you're mourning the loss of a loved one this Easter weekend. But the death does not have the final say. Your difficult circumstances don't have the last word. Jesus is not here, the angels announced. He is risen, and that can give you and I hope. Because He's alive, that can lift the discouragement. Because He's alive, He can put skip into your step as you leave here, because He's the one who gives you purpose and gives you meaning. You can have courage in whatever you're facing. The women that day, they dragged their feet walking to the tomb. But notice how they left the tomb that I read. They ran. Why? Because their hearts were full of joy that this good news that they had just witnessed, this objective fact, the tomb is empty, they knew they had to tell others about it. He is alive. I love verse 2. There was a violent earthquake. An angel of the Lord came down from heaven, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone, and sat on it. The woman had a problem that day. They're walking to the tomb, and they're thinking, how are we going to get in to embalm Jesus' body? There's a 2-ton stone in front of that grave. How are we going to roll that stone away? The guards that are there, are they going to help us, or are they going to send us away, and are they going to let us go in and embalm Jesus' body? And they arrive there. There's no guards. They've all fled. Who's there? This angel. And what's the angel doing? He's grinning. No doubt grinning from ear to ear as he's sitting on top of that stone that he's just moved. And notice, he didn't move the stone so Jesus could get out. Jesus was already out. He moved the stone so the women could get in and they could see this objective fact for themselves that Jesus is alive. And man, I would love to see the face of that angel, eh? Like, I'm guessing he's smiling. Like, are angels pranksters? Like, are angels like Pastor Chris, you know, who likes to play pranks? Like, I'm not saying Pastor Chris is an angel, but we know that. But you know, that he likes to play pranks. So is that what this angel's kind of just grinning from ear to ear, thinking, hey, women, you know, take a look at this. The tomb is empty. Friends, do you have some big stones in your life? There's good news from the graveyard. God still moves stones. See, you can focus on the size of your problem, or you can focus on the size of God, who is bigger than any problem you may face. You can worry about the stone you've got in your life, and that worry can keep growing until it overwhelms you. Or you can choose to focus upon this God who can remove your worries and your fears. One look at the empty grave can remind you that God diminishes the size of our problems, because no matter how big the stone in your life, a gigantic God who loves you is far greater than any problems or struggles or stones that you and I may face. The empty tomb, it alters everything. It altered human history, and it still changes our lives today. God still is in the business of moving stones that you and I may have in our lives. I'll invite the worship team to come to the front here, if I can get you guys out by 11:30 here. As the worship team comes, we're going to sing that Wren Collective song about God being the rescuer. Friends, He's your rescuer. He's your deliverer. If you didn't have a chance to pray with the prayer team, maybe they'll be available for prayer. And also, we've got the baptismal tank there. I'm wondering, can we just raise that screen a bit here? And if you'd like to go up while we're singing the song and maybe touch the water. You just want to go up and touch the water. Nothing superstitious about it, but just to remind yourself that Jesus died and Jesus rose again. Just like those baptismal candidates went down into the water and came back out. And it's objective fact that He is alive. And perhaps even as you go and walk to the front, you maybe want to say a prayer. And God, this day, is going to move a stone in your life. Worship team, take it away.